This week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, we have a discussion. I'm going to share with you a fascinating gematria. It's not all connected. It's not all connected to the word I'm going to give you in a few moments from now. It's not connected at all. The Parsha starts off. I'll help for a second. Parsha starts off with the following pasuk in Vayetze. Vayetze Yaakov Beersheva Vayelech Harana. Yaakov left Beersheva and he got to Haran. That's how the Torah starts this week's portion. Now it happens to be, and Rashi quotes as well, it happens to be that Vayetze Vayelech are not both required. Stay with me, boys. Stay with me, please. Vayetze means to go out. If you got somewhere, you definitely left somewhere else. So when you got to Haran, so you definitely left from Beersheva. Says Rashi, why mention Vayetze if there was a Vayelech, if he got to Haran? You know he left. So Rashi quotes a beautiful idea, which again is not to do all of our Torah, but I want to share with you how deep Rashi is. How much Torah we don't even understand is going on. How many people say Rashi Ruach HaKodesh? You see the beauty of Rashi, you're going to leave here dumbfounded, but it's not even what I want to share with you. That's just a side point, but I want you to leave dumbfounded with how great Rashi was. So Rashi here says the following words, I'll read to you inside. He says, when a tzaddik leaves an area, there's a roshim. What's the word roshim mean? That's the kias. What's roshim? It's a mark. It's a mark that's left, a void that's left. When the tzaddik is in the city, who hoda, who ziva, who hadra, he is its glory, he is its splendor, he is its something else that means that also, right? One another synonym for that. But pana yatsubisham, when he leaves the city, pana hoda, pana ziva, Panahadra. When he was in the city, the hod is gone, the ziv is gone, the honor is gone. We're missing. When the tzaddik leaves, we're missing. That's the pshat brought down in Rashi. But I saw with Daniel Sachs, we learned yesterday, and the Sefer Lekach Tov quotes, I don't know who he quoted even, but someone who was able to see within Rashi the following genius. You can believe it, I tell you it's a genius. Listen to this, watch this. Ready? If you take out Vayetze Yaakov, take Yaakov from the word Beersheva. Yaakov mi Beersheva. Take Yaakov out from Beersheva. Little gematria. I know it's the reverse order, but minus Beersheva from Yaakov. Or Yaakov Beersheva. What's Yaakov's gematria? Yaakov. Who's the gematria guys here?
180, 182.
Okay. And what's Beersheva's gematria? This is over here is 203. What is it?
203.
This is... Right? So altogether equals what?
Minus
182 equals what? Check this out. Ready?
Let's go.
If you take out Yaakov from Beersheva, Vayetze Yaakov, take Yaakov out of Beersheva. No.
Oh.
That
would be cool.
393, Harana, Chetna.
I was just
close to that. It's not that far off. That's pretty far off.
Wait.
Pana, Ziva, Hoda, Vihadra. Gematrias. Who's my Gematria, guys? Pana! You can't just say that now.
Wow.
135? Is that right? Pana, 135?
Ziva.
Hoda. Vihadra. Rashi said these words. Rashi said over here, the moment the tzaddik is here, it's panaziva, panahoda, panahadra. The gematria of this, 240, 375, 393. Take Yaakov from Beersheva, and Rashi's comment, Rashi didn't say it to you, right? Rashi never said it. Rashi just said the pshat. But the gematria is exactly what happens when you take out Yaakov from Beersheva. What's that? It means when the tzaddik leaves the city, it's Rashi quoting his words. The shine goes away, the splendor goes away, and the glory goes away. Again, Rashi didn't tell you that's what he was saying. He just said the words. But can you imagine how deep the Torah is, how Rashi said a line that didn't give any other hints besides that? And someone, I don't know who got all this time in his hands, but figured out that the Rashi's gematria is what happens when you take away Yaakov from Be'er Sheva. What a shot. Now, I don't at all want you to talk about the topic. I just want to share with you how deep Rashi is. But I want to share with you about something about the passage I did see. The Stipler quotes the Sefer Birchas Peretz, which is his Perish on Chumash, the following shot. He says that when you go somewhere, you vayelech and vayetze. You go out and you come to. Oftentimes, you're either one of those two. There's three ways you can go somewhere. Either you go just to leave, you have to get somewhere else. My parents are angry at me, I'm going to go out of my house. I don't care what gets, I'm just going to leave my house. I got somewhere in the end. I got to Caleb's house, but my key was leaving. Sometimes you have a case when I want to go somewhere. I don't care to leave, I just have to get there in the end. You know, we want to get to Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to leave my house, but I have to leave my house to get to Eretz Yisrael to get to Torah Tzaga. So I will leave my house, but it's not important. It's more getting to Torah Tzaga. And sometimes, he says, both the leaving and the going are important. They're both important. He brings down and says that in this week's Parsha, why did he say Vayelech and Vayetzeh and Vayelech? Because they were both important. Why? Because his parents gave him separate commandments. Rivka said one thing to him, and Yitzchak said something else to him. Why did Rivka want him to leave the house? Anyone know why Rivka wanted to leave the house? You got to get out of here. You got to get out. Why? Because it's going to kill you. Vayetzeh, get out of here. And what did Yitzchak say? Why did Yitzchak want him to leave the house? He didn't know anything about Yitzchak killing him. Why did Yitzchak want him to leave?
To get a wife.
To get a wife. So that it was Vayelech was important to Yitzchak. So why do we bring down Vayetzeh and Vayelech? Because when it came to Yaakov's action, Vayetzeh was important, doing Kibbutz Av'im of his mother, and Vayelech for his father. Now, I'll share with you an important line he brings up about us, about Yeshiva. He says, in the old days, way back when, this is a type of talking about, let's say, 67 years ago, he's talking about this topic. In the old days, 300 years ago, when you went to learn in yeshiva, Bach went to learn in yeshiva, you were leaving a home that was full of Torah, home that was full of Kedusha, and you were going to learn in Torah. And therefore, for you, the Vayetzeh was not important. Vayelech was important. You had to get there. But you didn't have to leave. In theory, you didn't have to leave. But since you had to leave, just practically speaking, it was only Vayelech and not Vayetzeh. But the Stiper says, and he was talking about 50 years ago, he said, it's a different generation that we live in. We live in a generation today, he says, when you have to leave in order to get to the yeshiva also. Why? Because you grew up in a place when all the things that are around you are keeping you focused on things that are not Torah conducive. And therefore, in the old days, even if you would get nothing out of yeshiva, you would sit and you wouldn't read a word the entire year, but you got out of the house. I'm not referring to your parents, I'm referring to your society that you're coming from. So that already has a possible productive result that you're able to clear your head of all of the things that we're so focused on. That's what he said 50 years ago. Today, I think he would argue on that today. You know why? Because when you leave your house, you don't even get out of your house. You don't leave. Because you bring with you all the same shtuyot that you had at home. Nothing different. It's all the same. You just happen to be sitting somewhere else in a different bed. But you might as well be home. You have the same movies on your iPods. You have the same exact music listening to in your... It's no different at all. So what he described as the yeshiva experience that you get to go vayelech nowadays is important to leave and important to arrive in the old days. Now, you're not even leaving and you're not, and then even being here is not doing the trick anymore. Because we're so focused and fixated. For example, I walk in my room, just an example, and I'm not anti-fantasy sports, you know that. My whole board is full of drafts. Which is fine. I'm happy I saw no one else. Because I appreciated the fact that this guy was picked away. I don't know what you guys wrong with you guys. What I don't understand is that the fact that you're going to spend your time while you're in yeshiva and you never left home. You never vayetzeh, you never got out. The stipler would be, he wouldn't even imagine the possibility. He thought before, you don't have to even leave, you can still get there. Now you can't even leave. There's nowhere to go. Unless you break off from it. I'm not suggesting, God forbid, you do anything drastic. But to recognize and to realize how significant this time is, that you're supposed to be away from it all. Not to take as much as you can with you. Food-wise, you take what you can with you, take all the tunas that you want, take whatever food that you don't. But the culture, the whole point of this year is dafka to leave it behind. When I was in Israel for the year, so we didn't have cell phones, there was no internet, it wasn't that long ago, it was 20 years ago. Nothing. I wanted to find a Redskins score, I called the operator to ask them who won the Redskins game. And I had to wait online to use the phone to do so. If I was living with you guys today in your dormitory, I would not be here today for sure. My guess, I wouldn't be religious, is my guess. That's my guess. Not because I was a regular kid. But a regular kid who joins regular other kids, it's very hard to be inspired religiously. I certainly wasn't when I got here. But I didn't have a choice in the matter. I didn't have the access to my life that I had at home. But you do. So you have two choices. You either basically are still living at home, but just living in Israel version of your home. Worth learning on the side, of course, that wasn't part of your life, but your spare time is all the same it always was. Or you put things away a little bit. The discipler who was saying beforehand that now we can't even leave, well, we can't even get there anymore either. He doesn't even realize that we can't even get there anymore. If you want to see what it's like, you want to just taste. Taste what it means to have opportunity to connect, to get somewhere that's not where you were coming from. Figure out a way to put a little bit behind you. Now, I want to share with you a very troubling and surprising Gemara based on this parsha. I'm going to tie them together at the very end. We all know that the Torah describes, and this is a separate piece, but we're going to see how it gets to it. The Torah describes Leah and Rachel in very different terms. Rachel is this beautiful woman. Yifas Torah, Yifas Meresh, she's beautiful. And what's about Leah? What does it say about her? Her eyes were weak. Gosh. It's like, you know, can you imagine a worse description compared to your sister, who's this beauty queen, and you're like, gosh, have you seen her eyes? Horrible. That sounds terrible. So the Gemara Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, describes what was going on there. And it brings down a pshat that says that what they said about Leah was actually a beautiful thing for Leah. How could that description be beautiful? It basically said that she's hideous looking. So it says, do you know why she looked like that?
She's crying.
So the Gemara brings down a story, but it's not a story you know. It's not the same story that you know. You know part of the story, but you know the whole story, Daniel. Listen to this story, and you'll appreciate its bizarre nature. And then I'm going to share with you why, what lessons to take from it, and what to bring with us. Here's why Leah's eyes were less than beautiful. Shaisa Shomas al Parshas Drachim. She would heard while people would come by between different towns. She would hear people talking, and they would say, "Bnei Adam Shayu Omrim." She heard people that were saying, "Shnei Banim Yesh La Rivka, Shnei Banim Yesh La Lavan." Lavan and Rivka, brother and sister, each have two children, one two boys and one has two girls. Gadol l'gadol, v'katan l'katan. The older ones will be matched up, and the younger ones will be matched up. So Leah's like, "Well, I'm an older one." She says to the person who said this news to her, she heard this often. She says, "V'asay yoshevus al pashtrachim." She would sit by the way. Umash elas, she would ask people, "Gadol ma masav? What's the older one like?" With her, you know, smiling, looking forward to the news of her bashir. And they said back to her, "Ishra, bad man. Malasim brios. He's a thief. He's terrible. Gosh." So she said back to them, "Katzan mamasav. How about the little guy, the younger one? What's he like?" They would say back, "Oh, what a tzaddik. And ish tam yosheva olim. He's a serious boy. He sits and he dies. He learns. A fine young man." And then the strange part of it all is that the Gemara ends off and says, "V'haisa bocha." And then she started to cry. "Achinash risa ena," until her eyelashes fell out. If I was Leah and I heard that my Basher was this monster, I wouldn't bother waiting to ask, "Hey, what's my sister getting? My life is terrible." Let's say she gets the same exact terrible life that I get. So I feel better about that. I'm happy. Why did she wait to cry until after she heard about Yaakov? Why? You hear the question? You know that part of the drash? The part's not found in Rashi. It's a quote of Rashi. It's about the whole Gemara. The Gemara said that she waited to cry until she heard about Yaakov. Why? So I'm going to share with you four very brief answers and tie it into what we just said a minute ago. Answer number one, perhaps, possibly number one. This is the worst one. I don't like it at all. I'm just saying because I want to be Yotze possibilities. Is that, you know, misery loves company. Okay, I have a bad one. But she's got a good one. That stinks for me. I'm jealous of what she has. I wish she had what I don't care if she had what I had. I would be much more comfortable about it. We both are terrible people. That's one thing. But she's got good and I've got bad. So that's a terrible answer. I hate that answer. But it's a possibility. Maybe she was very shallow and she was jealous. She was jealous because she didn't... If both of them had bad, okay, but not one bad, one good. That's not fair. She doesn't like that. Okay, possibly number one. But before I get to that point, I want to share with you what I think Leah did that was very unique. And I jumped the gun a little bit. Leah did two things that were very unique so far before I even got to that third point. Number one is that she had hopes for herself. She had hopes. She looked to the future. She wants to know, what's my life going to be like one day? number two, is that she had hopes and dreams that when they didn't meet up, she was frustrated by that and she cried on it. Very frustrated and cried. Those are two already big chidushim that she had that maybe none of us, we don't even have that. She had plans and visions for herself. That's part one. And when they weren't being met, she was very frustrated and saddened by that. I wonder how many of us in this room have plans and visions for ourselves. Like, we really know what we want to be in the end. And if not, why not? I've asked many people, what are your goals for the year? So many people had no goals coming in. Get better in learning. Shkoyach. You can go to any yeshiva, get better in learning. What's your goal for the year? What do you want to grow? How do you want to grow? How do you want to do more? How do you want to be a better person? To not have any goals means that you're setting yourself up for failure unless you sometimes realize, I need a goal. What are your goals? She had goals, she had dreams, she had visions. When they weren't being met, she broke out in tears, but she only broke out after she heard that Yaakov was great. So number one answer would be that she was a little bit jealous. Maybe. I don't like it, but could be. Number two possibility. Number two. A person has a hope, has a dream. Maybe I could change him around. Maybe he had a bad environment. Perhaps he grew up with parents who were not good parents. So the fact that he's not acting good, he's not acting well, maybe I could bring him around. So she said, what's the younger brother like? And they said, he's a dream. But they had the same parenting. They had the same level of people who were taking care of them, watching over them. And therefore, she says, I'm marrying a monster. Not a poorly brought up person, I'm marrying a monster. And that for her was a reason to cry. But she had what was called, she was down the kafskos. For a moment in time, she said, you know, I don't care what it's like. It doesn't bother me. As long as his brother's like that also. Not because I'm jealous. Because that means that it's something to work with. This is raw material here to work with. When she heard that the person that he was, the other person who grew up in the same home, was a tzaddik, and she knew it wasn't just poor education, it was that he's mamish in his root. He's a bad guy. And that caused her to cry. Okay, a little better. The third, and this over here is something important I think we can relate to. The third one, maybe, is that we assume there's a proper match. Besides just being older, younger, you know, there's a whole plan in the world. This is my bashert, meaning this is my equal. This is my parallel. That means that I am deserving or supposed to be with a monster. What does that make me? When a person has a slap in their face like that, where they realize this is your partner for life. Usually partners for life are supposed to be somewhat compatible with each other. And if I'm compatible with a monster, that makes me a monster too. And she cried at the thought that she and this person were a good match together. It was a slap in her face. That's basically, it's like a mushroom schmooze. She got a mushroom schmooze by someone saying, this is you. This is your male version of what you belong with. That's painful to hear. But the final thing I want to share with you, and this is what Yoni Lewis mentioned a week and a half ago, maybe a week ago, whatever it was, that he gave his mushroom schmooze, is that she realized that her life would fall well short of what it could have otherwise been. I could have been with Yaakov, and I could have been a person who was a real player in the world in a very positive fashion. And now I know I'll never get that. And the thought of what could have been and will end up being to her was a heartbreaker. It could be that it couldn't have been, but it could have been because it could have been the other brother. It could have been. That could have been who I was supposed to be with, and actually in the end that was. Before she realized that though, the pain of her realization that she wouldn't be what she should have been was painful. You already mentioned in the shmooze that something called a din necheshbon. You and I, we have one goal in life. Our one goal in life is whatever you're supposed to be, just to be that. That's it. That's it. We just heard the other day from Rav Avadia Yosef's grandson. He said Rav Avadia Yosef's grandson, he was given a gift. His brain was a gift. He gets no credit for that. Zero. Why should he get credit for a gift that God gave him? Anything you got as a gift, you get no credit for. You're a good-looking guy, no credit. Athletic, no credit. You get credit for what you do with that gift. All you can do is take advantage of your time. That's all you can do. And Leah felt like, I'll never be able to do it now. I'm going to be dragged down by someone who won't let me be who I'm supposed to be in the end. And she cried, realized that she would never become what she wanted to be. You and I are wasting so much of our time not the way we're supposed to be in the end. Ravaja's one thing he did, as he stressed over and over again, was he never wasted his time. Right now you have one thing over Ravaja, you have one thing over him right now. Is that you have life. He doesn't. He's sealed, he's finished. What he wouldn't do to trade places with any one of you for 5 minutes. Though he don't have his brain. He doesn't care about that. Because he gets no credit for that. He gets credit for one thing. He gets credit for taking advantage of his life, of his time. That's all he gets credit for. I'll end as I started. We came from a place when you have a chance to learn what it means to take advantage of things. If you put the things away sometimes. You know, just in the basic manner, you know, our phones are like they're a crutch. We can't stop looking. We can't stop talking in the basic manner. So Ravaja would give anything to sit for 5 minutes in your skin with your minimal brain and my minimal brain. He would take it in a second. Because it means that he's still a chance to do something more. And you sit and you waste it. You're sitting there, you're thinking about ridiculous things that don't matter at all. And you have your chance to do that later. But leave behind for the year where you came from. Just get a chance to see how great you can be. We should be zocha to hear a shir like Ravaja's grandson gave us. And not just walk out and be like, what a shir. And we all said the same thing. That was awesome. To quote Danny Brownwitz, I could listen and read the dictionary. That's how awesome a speaker he was. That's great. But that's nothing if you walk out and you don't do anything about it afterwards. We should merit, take the lesson of Leah, lesson of Ravad Yosef, put them together, leave our home environment, come to the yeshiva, and embrace all that it has to offer. Have a good Shabbat. Unfortunately.